All right, welcome back to another exciting edition of the SB Nation Houston podcast. With me, as always, is Dylan Gwynn of Sports Talk 790. Sir, any injuries to report? It seems like a lot of injuries are going around. I don't know. Yeah.
Do you
have a collarbone that needs to be looked at? Everything checking out okay with you?
My Liz Frank is still intact.
All right, well, that's good.
My collarbone, is, as far as I know, is still there, but the day is young.
Yes.
And there is a hex hanging over our fair city, so I'm positive by the end of the day I will have fractured something.
There's no doubt you will leave in a cast of some sort. Of course, the Houston Texans quarterbacks cannot say that they are injured already, so it looks like we have TJ Yates, at least for now, possibly Jake DeLhomme down the road. We were talking before Matt Schaub's injury, we were talking about 12-4, 13-3, you know, possible Super Bowl run. Then he gets hurt. We downgrade it, you know, with Liner 2. Okay, 11-5. Probably still a first-round victory since the six seeds aren't looking very good right now. Where do you see this team with TJ Yates?
I think this team will go as far as the defense in the running game carries them. Yeah. TJ Yates is along for the ride. I think he'll one day be a good quarterback that leads teams to the playoffs.
You liked him coming out of the draft,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was surprised he was available in the fifth round. I think the Texans were surprised he was available in the fifth round. That's why they took him. But at the same time, you're asking a fifth-round rookie quarterback, third stringer, to go in there and win down the stretch here against some pretty good teams. I mean, look, the last few weeks, it actually would have been better if this had happened like a few weeks ago.
Before the bye?
The Texans were playing some pretty god-awful teams there for a while, and now all of a sudden they welcome Atlanta to Reliance Stadium. They go on the road against
Cincinnati.
It
softens up after that, though. You got Carolina and Indianapolis.
How soft is Carolina, though?
Well, the defense is soft, and I think that's the main part you got to be worried about.
Carolina's defense is awful. Yeah, but you also have a third-string quarterback. The defense is soft, but, I mean, you have a third-string quarterback, so you're not as good as you used to be either. And they can score. I mean, remember, think about what it took 2 weeks ago. It took the Lions an offensive explosion to come back and win the game against Carolina. They had to score 49 points in the final, you know, 20 of those 49 points in the final 10 minutes.
Well, I don't think the Texans will need 49 to beat the Panthers.
Hope not. I'm saying
I would expect the Texans to hold the Panthers to about 24 points against the Panthers' awful defense. Depending on what the run game does, I don't think that's unreasonable to say they could, you know, get to about that total.
No, I mean, look, it's softer than Atlanta and Cincy, but it's not soft. All I'm saying is that, you know, that's a very, very potent team there, and they can score some points. So you've got that to worry about. I mean, I think at the most, TJ Yates goes 2-3 down the stretch, at the most, beating Indy and probably Carolina, losing to Atlanta, Cincinnati, and Tennessee. I think that'll be enough for the Texans to clinch the division.
In that scenario, if they beat Indianapolis and Carolina, that Tennessee game at the end of the year would be meaningless at that point. The Texans, with five games to go, are two games up, plus they have the tiebreaker based on division record. So those two wins would ice it. On top of that, the next 2 weeks for the Titans, they're at the Bills and at home for the Saints. At best, that's 1-1.
Right.
And very easily could be 0-2 for the Titans. So, yeah, I think this division's still wrapped up. Your Texans will go to the playoffs. Maybe it's only a 10-6 record at this point, probably not 11-5. Do you give them any shot in a first-round game versus, say, a Cincinnati Bengals?
I give them nothing more than a puncher's chance. I mean, you can look at the game. Yes, there are going to be two rookie quarterbacks starting, but one of those rookie quarterbacks is not only better, he started every game this year for his team, and that's Andy Dalton. TJ Yates is going to start the final five. So, I mean, I think there's an experience deficit there. I don't give them more than a puncher's chance. I don't think you can win a playoff game in today's NFL with a rookie third-string quarterback.
No, I agree. Unfortunately, I think they're a playoff team still, but one and done. Now, looking to this week specifically, they have the Atlanta Falcons coming in. And a lot of, when you talk about the Atlanta Falcons, almost everything is focused around, you know, Matt Ryan, Roddy White, Julio Jones, Michael Turner. But people forget to mention that the Falcons are ranked second in the entire league in rush defense. Now, against the Texans, like you said earlier, who are going to have to win with the run game, that's a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, going into this weekend, your concerns are not Roddy White and Julio Jones.
No.
Your concerns are the fact this is the number two team in the league against the run, and you've got to win with your running game. So that's got to concern you. Now, there also is this factor. A lot of people throw on Atlanta because they are just not
kind of like
great,
the Texans last year.
Yeah, they don't have a great pass defense.
They don't run on you because passing is so easy.
Whatsoever. So, I mean, maybe those numbers on the rush defensive side are a little bit inflated over what they otherwise would be. One thing you also have to remember this weekend, Brent Grimes, the very good corner for Atlanta, is not playing. In fact, I heard he's out maybe for the rest of the year.
Well, that's certainly a plus.
So, I mean, you know, you factor those things in too.
They're only ranked 23rd against the pass with them, so without them.
Yeah. So, I mean, you
maybe,
know.
I think, and tell me if you agree with this. Most people are taking the train of thought of, well, you have to, you know, hand it to Foster and Tate, probably combined 40, 45 times, limit the throws by Yates, control the clock. That's the way you can win.
Yeah.
But tell me if I'm crazy, and if he goes out and throws if he goes out and throws a pick right away, you're probably backing off of this philosophy. But to me, the Falcons are going to come out like the Raiders with eight guys in the box, dare you to pass it. To me, the only way to open things up for the run is to not let Yates run the full Shaw playbook, but at least to let him run what you're doing with Leinart. I mean, the game plan in the second half, and Kubiak said it was basically because they were feared of getting Yates hurt too and having to play Owen Daniels. But I think you have to open it up. I think you have to run at least 75% of the normal offense just to, you know, back the guys off the line of scrimmage. And I think that's the only really way you're going to tell if Yates can do what you need him to do when it comes
to
playoff time.
Let's also remember this, though. Yates has a better arm than Matt Schaub.
Well, strength-wise,
So, I mean, you know,
obviously
you may
the most mobile.
Not only just run the same playbook you did with Schaub, you may actually expand it if you're talking about trying to scare them in out of the eight-man box and stuff like that.
I almost would come out with, first play action, go along to Andre Johnson. Put that doubt in their mind.
Yeah, I mean, you run the risk, obviously, of a pick and shattering his confidence at a very early stage of the game. But
he's a fifth-round pick.
I'm sure he doesn't see himself as being the cast-off that we see him as being. So, I mean, you have to factor that in. You're running the risk of putting him in a position where his confidence is shattered from the first play of the game. So, I mean, you do have to factor that in, but... But look, I wouldn't expect them to throw the ball more than 20 times in the game.
No, I'm not saying go out there
I would say that in the early going, because of what you said, I would expect them to do more of their passing in the early going to get them out of the 8 and 9 man fronts, and then you can start running your normal offense that you want to run, which is Arian Foster and
Ben
Tate.
That's exactly my point. Yeah. I was in no way advocating an Aaron Rodgers type game plan. But I think if he's going to throw it 20 times, 10 of those probably need to come in the first quarter. I think you got to loosen things up. I think you got to put some doubt in the Falcons' mind, especially if he completes one or two of those first passes. All of a sudden, they back off a little bit in that running game, which you said, and I agree with this, the numbers might be a little inflated. Maybe then those holes open up for Foster. Because, I mean, when you look at Foster's game against Jacksonville, once the Jaguars figure out the Texans were never going to pass, outside of that one, 30, 40-yard run he had, I believe he only had like 23 yards on 21 carries.
Yeah. It was 65 yards total, 43 of those on one run.
Right. So, I mean, I think what you have to avoid, just be getting too predictable. And I know you may risk an early interception, but I still think it's worth that risk. I mean, so what do you see here for the game? You see a Falcons win like I do?
Yeah, oh, totally. I actually had the Falcons with Matt Schaub as the quarterback. So, I mean, I...
Want to gather a... offer up a score prediction here?
I'll offer up 24-10. It's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be a nail-biter. I think 24-10 is reasonable. I think the defense will do a good job, but the defense is going to have, I mean, this is not only is this a better offense than anybody they've faced in the last 5 weeks, but they're going to be on the field the
probably
entire time. You got to remember this. Over this last 5-game win streak, in 4 out of the 5 games, the Texans had a dominant time of possession advantage, and that helps your defense. Now, that advantage, I think, is going to go away.
It's going to be
gone. That's
going to
be obliterated. So this defense is going to be on the field all the time. unlike what was going on earlier in the year.
So you have 24-10?
Yeah, 24-10, I think
so. I was thinking 23-10, so we're...
Oh, come on. You're like that dude on The Price is Right who goes like $1.
I was just going to say that. Price is Right you. Now, before we get off the Texans and move to college football, I think we got to talk about Connor Barwin. I tweeted this out in the middle of the game. I think it was after his third sack. It goes back to a previous conversation that we'd had on this podcast. But that is the reason why you do not pay Mario Williams Julius Peppers money.
Yeah.
He and Reed are perfectly capable of getting a pass rush after the quarterback every game, every play. And I think you're better off moving that money towards a cornerback or something else. Do you still feel like they should move on?
No, absolutely. I mean, he's got 6.5 sacks in November. That's why he was the NFC or NFL Defensive Player of the Month. But you look at him, Brooks Reed, J.J. Watt, and Brian Cushing. Those four guys together who have played the lion's share of the year without Mario Williams. They have 23 sacks between them. I mean, you know, this is, it's not like the absence of Mario Williams has drastically offset the defensive production.
No,
of
if you take away Mario's sacks, I mean, they're still, you know, what, top 10 in the league in sacks, even without Mario's sacks figured in?
Yeah, I think they're second in the
league
right now.
Right, no, second with them, right, yeah.
I mean, you're at the number one defense in the NFL, you're second in sacks, and this is all without Mario Williams, and then you're going to go spend the $22 million
it would take
to franchise him next year? It's ridiculous, especially when, as I've stated many times, this defense is one Jonathan Joseph injury away from having a good quality secondary to having a relentless crap fest. I mean, because you take away Jonathan Joseph, I don't care how good Daniel Manning is, you can talk about the improvements that Kareem Jackson has made. That all goes away in a New York minute if Jonathan Joseph is injured.
All right, now you spoke about Joseph. I think he, I don't know if you agree with this, but to me, he's got to make the Pro Bowl along with Cushing. And he's not going to get in because he doesn't have the sexy defensive end stats, but I think J.J. Watt's playing like a Pro Bowler as well. If you're Kubiak, and I know this is kind of a meaningless award, and I know you're not really an awards guy, but who would you say has been the best player on the Texans defense this year? Joseph's playing out of his mind. Cushing's been playing out of his mind. Obviously, Watt, Brooks Reed, Barwin. Who would you say has played the best at this point?
Brian Cushing,
without a doubt.
I think Jonathan Joseph is the most valuable player on the defense right now, but Brian Cushing, in terms of raw explosion production and play on the field, is the best player on the defense.
Switching over to college football, a game of local importance and a game that I certainly will be watching. The Texas Longhorns traveled north to Waco to take on the Baylor Bears. Reports are Robert Griffin will play. I believe he went as far as to say he was, in his mind at least, which obviously was rattled, but he was fine 5 minutes into the second half. They were just taking it easy with him, which, you know, they should. It was Texas Tech, and he did have a concussion, or at least concussion-like symptoms. So with Robert Griffin
III. What is that, by the way?
I don't know. You know, I still don't know.
I've never been sick with, like, you know.
Flu-like symptoms?
Flu-like symptoms, shingles-like symptoms. come on, you're either concussed or you are not.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And selfishly, I mean, as much as I like to watch Robert Griffin III, I was looking forward to a game without him for my Longhorns. But
yeah,
they do face him. Just first glance, I'm almost thinking a game kind of like what the Longhorns face against Oklahoma State. A game that they compete in, a game that they're in the whole way, but they end up losing by 10 points. That's my first guess. But an interesting stat that I saw was, you know, basically pointing out the differences between the Texas defense and how good it's been versus Robert Griffin III. Of RG3's 30-plus touchdowns, I believe he has 35, they've been for an average of about 33, 34 yards.
Mm.
The Texas defense has not given up a passing touchdown of over 19 yards this season.
Until now.
So, exactly. something has to give.
Yeah.
My question to you is, the Texas secondary has obviously played really well. The Longhorns' run defense has played really well, which could force Baylor to be one-dimensional. If they're able to get after Robert Griffin, pick off a pass or two, do you think, as bad as Baylor's defense is, if Texas is able to move the ball on the ground, that gives them a chance to win?
Texas is always going to have a chance. There's you know, they just have too much talent to not have a chance. Especially when you can run the football and play defense. But
here's the stat for you. I mean, I mentioned the defensive stats for Texas. Right now, Baylor ranks 97th in the country in rush defense. That could be a problem versus Texas.
Maybe I'm
putting on the burnt orange glasses here. But the weather report right now looks to be, you know, possible thunderstorms, 16-mile-an-hour winds. That seems to favor a running game and possibly a sloppy game that I think could favor Texas.
It's cloudy with a chance of Longhorns. Is that what you're trying to say? I'll go with that. I get it. I'm not predicting blowout necessarily,
okay.
But at some point you got to be able to move the ball down the field on a consistent basis.
They'll have to move it with the run. There's no doubt about that.
I don't see that happening. All right, I just feel like Baylor is. Even if they manage to run all day on Baylor's defense and do some things down the field, I don't think that they've seen a quarterback as good as Robert Griffin all year long. And I think he's going to be good, and I think Baylor's just going to be too much for him. Normally their defense can keep him in games, and they've done a very good job of that. I don't think that's going to happen this weekend.
No, I the scenario to me would be you're not going to shut down Robert Griffin III. I'm not that crazy. But I think the hope would be is your run defense maybe not 400 yards, but is close to the level what you did against Texas Tech. That is the idea. And if you're able to do that, able to control the clock, keep RG3 off the field, then maybe you could win a game, you know, 27-24 with, several rushing touchdowns. But most likely, you know, if I had to put money on it, you're right, I would pick Baylor. I'm just throwing this scenario out there for that could be done. Looks like the winner will go to the Alamo Bowl. Loser goes to the Holiday Bowl. But
I think that makes them all losers. I think everybody loses when you're talking about Alamo and Holiday Bowl. I just think that just
doesn't kinda not seem like 10 years ago when they were playing in the title game versus Alabama.
Yeah.
God, that seems like a long time
ago.
Well, all right, let's move up off of that. All right, now after that look at the Texas game this weekend, let's talk a little bit about the future of UT football. A rumor started circulating yesterday afternoon as we record this on Friday morning that Mack Brown would possibly step down this Saturday after the Baylor game. Now, from a UT fan perspective, I actually wasn't that shocked. There were reports that came out last season that had they had a good year last season, which they obviously did not at 5-7, that he would have retired then, but he didn't want to leave the program after such a bad season. The thought's always been that, you know, Mac would eventually probably retire earlier than, you know, some other coaches have and move up to AD as DeLoss Dodds also retires. I'll start off with, do you think he will retire? And if he does, who do you think are the top candidates? Who do you think they'll go after to take his spot?
Well, I mean, I as far as whether or not he will, I mean, again, Twitter rumor. I don't know, but it's not out.
No,
of,
but I think where there's smoke with this one, I think there's a little fire. This didn't come out of left field.
Well, no, I mean they've had two bad years by their own standards. So I mean, you know, I'm as far as whether or not that report is true that he'll retire after this weekend's game, or you know, I mean, I don't know about that, but I'm not going to be shocked.
Yeah,
if it happens,
I guess that's my point. I would not be shocked. Yeah.
The one thing I would be a little bit surprised about at this point is whether or not he would take over as athletic director.
Well, that's been a long stated.
Yeah, but I mean that was long stated back when things were all, you know, rosy and hunky dory. I don't know.
I think it fits him perfectly though, because even as a coach, he models himself more as a CEO who delegates and lets the guys underneath him do the work. So I think an AD. That really fits his personality quite a bit.
Maybe it will be, but from what I've gathered talking to different people, I sense that there's an anti-Mac Brown movement in Austin that's pretty strong. And
okay,
there's a lot
maybe
of people,
so. I mean, I don't feel that way, but maybe the people in Austin do.
There's a lot of people out there who, you know, have who really don't want him there, and it, not even as a head coach, but maybe even not as an athletic director.
That is
as
true.
Well.
That astounds me. I mean, the guy. Maybe I'm looking at this through burnt orange cutter glasses, but in the modern college football, we have so many a-holes and d-bags as coaches. Mac seems to be one of the good guys who, at least in my opinion, I'd want around the program until the day he decides to hang it up.
Yeah,
but if they feel otherwise, you know, I guess they'll make the move, point, and we'll see.
Yeah, getting back to the original thing, though, I mean, whether or not he assumes is the AD, I mean, that's we'll see. But as far as head coach, you know, I mean, he's very hard to defend at this point because this is the second greatest recruiting state in the country, next to the state of Florida.
Okay.
He coaches for the University of Texas, meaning you're going to have definitely have the advantage over a lot of other schools in recruiting here. And in 2 years since Colt McCoy has left, he hasn't landed a quarterback who can play.
And that's, no, that's certainly true. And I think that's a part of why he might leave is I think he realizes he's going to have to change a quarterback for, what, a fourth time in two seasons? So at the age of 60, I believe he turns 60 later this year or next season, does he want to go through another quarterback change? And that might be the biggest part of why he steps down.
Well, and whoever it's going to be, it's going to be a true freshman. I mean,
it might be Connor Brewer, who we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, you're starting all over again. It's not like you're getting some hot JUCO transfer or something like that. You're getting a kid who's going to come in as a freshman, and you're going to have to start and take that huge gamble and roll the dice again. And you know, maybe he decides he wants to do it. Maybe he's not given a choice. I just think that it's pretty inexcusable. And I've been a big supporter of his too, but it's pretty inexcusable at this point, 2 years after Colt McCoy, to not have a guy who can play. And nobody's expecting the Vince Young to Colt McCoy lineage to continue one A-lister to another A-lister.
No, Texas fans, including myself, were spoiled for seven
seasons. Yeah, you're always
going to
have a drop-off. I mean, there's no question about it.
I mean, there's no doubt.
This is more than a drop-off. This is a sheer dive off the edge of a cliff between Colt McCoy and Case McCoy or Colt McCoy and David Ash. I mean, you don't even have an average quarterback right now. Think about it. With their defense and their running game, if they even had an average quarterback, that's a
10 wins. I would even say 10 wins. I mean, yeah, they've taken their shot. I mean, Max Fault or not, they've gotten highly recruited guys in Ash and Gilbert. Unfortunately, those guys have just been awful. So whose fault that is, of course, it's ultimately the coaches. I think Texas will also maybe need to evaluate some of the recruiters and who they decide to go after. But going forward, I mean, a couple weeks ago we talked about the Nick Saban rumor. Who do you think they go after? I mean, Kirby Smart we've talked about possibly becoming available. Maybe Gary Patterson at TCU. Who do you see Texas going after?
Kirby Smart, I like Kirby Smart, but I don't know that he necessarily suits the Big 12 and the kind of style they play here. I think Nick Saban, obviously, the pedigree, the national championships, I mean, that's an A-list.
Yeah, if you can get Nick Saban, you just take any other interview.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I think Gary Patterson would be my number two, but Kirby Smart, I think, is a better fit where A&M is going than necessarily where UT is right now. I mean, A&M's going to a defensively dominated conference in the SEC. Kirby Smart is already there, already won championships as a defensive coordinator there. Or championship, and he's already familiar with the players and coaches in that conference. I think that's a better fit for them there than he would necessarily be at UT. I think Nick Saban would be awesome. That's choice number one. Gary Patterson would probably be
choice
number two.
If both of those guys turn you down, would you call Sumlin?
No. I'm not giving Kevin Sumlin the keys to the ship. And Arizona State is literally insane. If that report is true, they're offering him $4 million.
That's a lot. Yeah,
that is crazy. More than Les Miles.
I don't blame them.
Les Miles has won a national championship and does not make $4 million.
Probably a second, yeah.
A year. Kevin Sumlin has not played a ranked opponent until this weekend.
Until this week, yeah.
And he's going to make more money than a coach who not only has won a national championship, but has the number one team in the land right now. So I think that is ludicrous, and I would be totally against that. Kevin Sumlin needs a nice in-between job.
No, I agree. I was just throwing it out there. I mean, I don't blame Arizona State for offering the job. I think it's actually a good hire. But $4 million, I mean, come on, shake yourself. He's not worth $4 million.
Urban Meyer, who won two
is getting
national
like four or $5 million
here.
He's
getting
yeah.
four even from Ohio State. He's won two national championships.
Yeah.
That's Ohio State.
That is a crazy number.
Arizona State. Arizona State is on the auxiliary stage next to Ohio State. I mean, they're not even they can't even park Ohio State's car as a program.
Yeah.
Giving Kevin Sumlin the same money? It's absurd. Chip Kelly's about to win the win the Pac-12. He went to the national championship last year, makes $2.8 million.
So you're saying it's not a good deal?
Oh, I'm
sensing some passion over here.
I am
here.
Literally just beside myself. If that report is true, and Sports by Brooks does a very good job.
They do. They
if
do.
That, if that report is true, that is ludicrous. And A&M should walk away from it.
All right, well, I guess we'll see what shakes out here after this weekend's game at Baylor. I agree with you, and I'd have Saban 1, Patterson 2 after that. I'd have to dig into it a little bit more. I don't know if these guys would be exactly who I'd go for, but I like a coach I like a lot, Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern. I think he's gotten a lot out of that team and that school over the last 5 years. I don't know if he's, you know, the third guy on that list, but just throwing out another name that I like. Now, moving on to a school that actually has an opening right now. A&M went ahead and made the move last night. They fired Mark Sherman. We've talked about it in past weeks. We both thought that was the decision that had to be made. There's talks about Kevin Sumlin. There's talks about Kirby Smart. Where do you think the Aggies go here?
Well, I mean, if Kirk Bowles is to be believed, and he's the guy who broke the story, so
he's usually pretty on. He's connected.
I mean, to believe him, it's Kevin Sumlin number one. I think that's a huge mistake. I think taking a guy from Conference USA, where he's played again no ranked opponents all year long, and then giving him a much bigger program, much more higher profile at A&M, and dropping him off in a conference that has five teams in the top 14 right now, I think is a
it's huge certainly a step up in the competition.
Huge risk. And by the way, how good do we know Kevin Sumlin really is? I mean, take away Case Keenum. Do we really know that U of H is annihilating people and blowing them out 73-13 like they did with Tulane? Are they nearly as dominant? I would like to see Kevin Sumlin one season without Case Keenum.
No, I agree. I mean, we saw basically that last year, and they were 5-7.
Well, I mean, again, last year he gets a little bit of a mulligan because they lost their backup too. Cotton Turner
true,
got hurt.
True.
So, I mean, they were on their third
same
string.
Same game, no less.
Well, I mean, they're on their third string guy. So, I mean, I give him a little bit of a mulligan.
No, I do
that.
Agree with you, but I think that's the exact reason that if someone has further aspirations in Houston, which I have to assume he does, I think he makes the leap this year because you just mentioned it. Not only is Keenum leaving, like all the receivers are leaving. I think half that defense is leaving. They're going to go through probably
at least a six and six season
next year.
Signs, McGraw, and Sammy Brown.
Yeah, they're
Those
losing
are the three best defensive players
on a bad defense.
On
no
a
less.
Bad defense, how good do you think that defense is going to be next year? Also think about this:
his stock will plummet.
And
if
this is
he
something
comes back
I've
next
always,
year.
I've always said this: college coaching is 90% recruiting. How many of those recruits are Kevin Sumlin's? Look at the guys who are the A-listers on the team right now. He didn't recruit Case Keenum.
No, that's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Did he recruit Patrick
Robbins? No. And I don't Tyrone Carey, I don't believe he recruited any of those. I mean, I'm not 100% on them, but those are four, you know, Case's point, you know, 6 year senior, but those other guys are all seniors. I believe Edwards is a 5th year senior. So no, that would have still been under Briles.
Yeah, so I mean, those are their best players, and he didn't recruit those guys.
If I was Kansas, I would take the chance on him. If I was Washington State, I would take the chance on. Of course, they already hired Leach, which I think is a great hire, by the way.
Sure,
but you're right. If you're Texas or now the Aggies going to the SEC. I would like to see another year from him, but if someone's smart, I think he goes ahead and makes a jump because with all that talent off his team, even if he is a really good coach, they're going to have a significant drop-off. And I mean, look at the guys that we've seen in recent years, like Greg Schiano from Rutgers. Remember how hot his stock was at one point? And where is it now? Nothing.
Yeah, what's Rutgers?
Yeah, exactly. So I think if someone, like we talk about with Matt Barkley and guys in college that, you know, strike while the iron's hot, I think someone, if he's smart, strikes while the iron is hot and probably takes, I would say, I mean, if Arizona State offers you $4 million, I think you go to Arizona State.
Well, there's no question. I mean, because the idea that A&M would exceed that offer.
It's crazy.
I mean, if I'm A&M, there's no chance I'm exceeding that offer.
if they don't go after Sumlin, you think they go after Kirby Smart as the next choice?
I would think Kirby Smart.
Of course, that would probably mean waiting till what, January 9th after the title game to make that phone call?
Well, that is a little while. Not necessarily. I mean, with the way things go in college football today, I mean, I would think they would call his...
I guess they could get him out before then.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, but I've also heard that Charlie Strong...
From Louisville
is on that list too. So
yeah, I know he's been highly regarded. They might make a BCS bowl this year.
Yeah,
though in a lesser conference.
So I just, you know, there's some names out there, but it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough. I would say Kirby Smart for my personal preference. Yeah,
that would certainly be a home run. Now I mentioned just a second ago, we get to talk some NBA hoops. Because the lockout, we don't have any party favors or anything. We don't have a whistle or anything to fire off. But the Woo-hoo! Lockout, lockout is over. So I guess it's time to start talking free agents. And obviously, the biggest need, this goes without saying, for the Rockets is a big man.
Right.
Because Chuck Hayes, as much as I love him, is not an NBA center. So I'm looking at a list of possible free agents, some restricted, some unrestricted. I'm going to run down, you know, a couple of them. Let me know what you think, and maybe in who you would want the most, and also who you think is the most likely for the Rockets to be able to land. Five guys. You have Nene, who's restricted. Marc Gasol, also restricted. Tyson Chandler, who's unrestricted, but he'll probably go back to the Mavericks. DeAndre Jordan with the Clippers, he's restricted. Played at A&M. And Samuel Dalembert, who was unrestricted. Who would you want the most if their $10 million under the cap can get that player, and who do you think is the most likely?
Everything I've heard from the Rockets is that Nene is their number one target. I think that none of those guys you're going to get without massively overpaying.
Probably not.
Because the problem right now in the NBA is that there is probably the biggest dearth of big men and skilled big men that we've ever seen. I mean, there just aren't a lot of these guys out there. It's one number one thing that's been holding the Rockets back for the longest here. So you take the incredible value that all these guys have, unless the Rockets are willing to pony up something in the neighborhood of 4 years, $70 million, you know, something like that, their chances of landing those guys are not that good. So I would think maybe DeAndre Jordan.
Now the Clippers could block him. He is unrestricted.
Right.
What do you think of a Samuel Dalembert?
I like Dalembert.
He is unrestricted.
But I've heard that Dalembert also likes the Heat.
He likes the Heat. Apparently, from what I've read, it's between the Heat, the Knicks, and the Rockets, which, unfortunately, the Rockets probably finished third on that list.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question who's number three on that list.
I mean,
there may be some dispute over who's number one, but there's no question over who's number three. So, I mean, I would view that as being unlikely. I mean... I don't know. With $11 million, I don't know if that's enough to sign any of those guys.
No, really. You'd have to probably make a move somewhere else, maybe backload some of the contract. I know a part of the new CBA is the contract length and max dollars has gotten a little bit smaller, so maybe that plays in the Rockets' favor. But yeah, like you said, Nene, Marc Gasol, those guys are going to get the maximum amount of money they can achieve, so... Though they might be out of the Rockets' price range, I think you got to hope that maybe the Knicks and Heat find help elsewhere, and maybe Dalembert is left with nowhere else to go. But otherwise, I guess you take a shot at DeAndre Jordan, and as good as he is on the defensive side, he still, to this point, doesn't have much of an offensive game, so I wouldn't really want to overpay for him. But I guess with Chuck Hayes, you don't have much of a choice. You have to spend somewhere. So who would you say is the most likely if you had to pick between those five guys?
I would say DeAndre Jordan.
DeAndre Jordan.
Just because you're going down a couple notches from the Nenes and the Dalembert and people like that. Just somebody who might be a little bit more affordable, and he'll even though he doesn't have much of an offensive game. I mean, the Rockets can supply the offensive game.
No, they've got offense in other areas. That's for sure.
It would be a situation where he'd be coming in to fill a specific role. And he actually fulfills that role for the Rockets.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Next week, we have the start of the free agency period in the NBA on Friday the 9th. So we will definitely get a little more into that next week. But until then, Dylan, tell them where to find you.
You can find me at Sports Talk 790 here in Houston, 790 on the AM dial, 11 to noon, Monday through Friday, and always online at sports790.com.
All right, he is Dylan Gwynn. He is at The Mighty Gwynn on Twitter. I am at Sacked by BMAC. Check out the blog, KTRH.com, The Hit and Run. We will talk to you next week.